you know, I'm trying to figure out what to do. And the woman's just walking closer and she's kind of smiling a little bit. And then she just goes, your legs look really good in this pants.
Butterscotch
shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 150.
Oh, my God.
Of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm drinking Bengal Spice Tea.
I'm Sam, and I'm the artist.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is May.
Yep. With you so far?
Uh-huh.
14.
Uh-huh.
You with me so far still?
Yep.
And also it's 2018. Cool. Well, before we get started, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show. There's going to be profanity. So if you're a child, exit. Just exit the room, the building, whatever receptacle you're in.
Mm-hmm. Closest exit. Right? Even if it's a fire exit, just blow right through there.
Mm-hmm. All right. So first order of news for this week. This is episode 150. To which,
what does that even
I
mean?
I think how we all feel right now is woo.
I feel exultant.
Just exuberant.
Yep. Just feeling it.
Yeah, I've never felt more elated. I don't think.
Wow. Let's talk about what this just means. Wow. That means we've sat in a room
for 150 hours,
laid in bed together.
That's
true. Something we used to have to do before we had a room that we could do this.
We shared earbuds.
Mm-hmm. In bed
with a mic in between us.
Yep.
In bed. Specifically for the acoustics.
Yes.
Very soft. And I had to
not
go,
for any other weird reason.
Because I was recording in Dallas at the time, mm-hmm. remotely. And I lived underneath an airport. Not under the airport.
Under where the airplanes went.
Yeah, that part, right.
That was in the hangar bay.
So it got real fucking loud. Every 20 minutes. It was just...
So all of a sudden, Adam would get quiet because he would hold his mute button down while airplanes mm-hmm. passed overhead. Yep.
And so then I would go into my bedroom and I would sort of put pillows up on all sides of me and have my, you know, microphone sitting in front,
mm-hmm.
trying to just muffle as many noises as I could. And it gets real hot.
Yeah. And you know, we've come a long way. Now we're in just a dank ass storage room in a basement.
It's particularly dank today because of some strange
kind of a comforter washing mishap.
Yeah.
So no good. it's just wafting in here.
PSA folks, when you wash your comforters, just get them dried out real mm-hmm. fast.
I think it was around episode like 70 or so that we nailed a bunch of blankets to the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
which was, it's actually an upgrade. I know.
That
know,
doesn't sound it like doesn't it sound from like the outside.
But it is.
But yeah.
And moving blankets, and they smelled terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We've been just sort of in a cocoon of aromas.
They have since sort of just kind of become a neutral entity
mm-hmm.
in terms of smell.
You know, I think it is a miracle that any podcast gets made, which, you know, given how smelly and or uncomfortable it must be mm-hmm. while you're recording.
We have been talking about how much we're looking forward to having an office someday when we can afford one. And one of the key reasons is so that we can just design a podcasting space that's just pleasant mm-hmm. and amazing.
Who knows?
Yes.
Who knows what the quality
I don't know what that will be like.
Well, I think one of the first things we can aim for is that it just doesn't smell like a butt.
That'd be pretty good.
Like an underground butt.
I do want to say a big thanks to all of our listeners because, of course, no one cares if you're just in a room that smells bad talking about your life. And sometimes you talk about it enough that people maybe
start to listen.
Pick up a whiff of the good that you're spelling out there in the world. And we've actually gotten, and I don't know what it was, but there was a period of time like last couple of weeks where we got a few notes from people, either handwritten or letters in the mail, that sort of thing, talking about the podcast specifically or just emails, whatever else, and about how it's been strangely good for them. And this is always one of those befuddling things because we spend most of our time making the games and we come in here and sort of goof off and talk about stuff for an hour every week. And, you know, we get notes about the games, but usually only around launch. Like I haven't got a note about Crashlands being like a transformative thing for a person for probably a good 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
But then, we're working on Levelhead and sort of slaving away at this thing. And then every so often someone's just like, hey, you know that thing you just kind of mess around doing? That's my favorite part.
It matters a lot.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's great.
Yeah. It's nice to hear those. It makes it so that we understand what this thing is for.
Yeah.
You know, which at the beginning we were like, why the fuck are we doing this?
Yeah.
Especially before the Crashlands launch when we had, you know, we were barely eking out 100 listens per episode. It was usually about 50,
mm-hmm.
30 to 50.
Yep.
And then on a real good week, if we did something real fancy in the news or something, we might spike up to like 80 or 100. And at the time we were just like, we just need the content. Like, we need to have these episodes.
But we don't know why yet. But we
so
need.
That, because nobody cares about your first episode.
That's right.
Right? Like, we needed to hit the point where we had enough stuff that once we did something people cared about and were willing to listen to us, then they could go back and listen to us. They listened to the journey of getting there.
We have seen many other podcasts whose first episode was featured on the front pages of all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, inexplicably.
That's because they're part of these podcasting networks and stuff. I've seen podcasts get featured. I use a pocket cast or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they will sometimes feature podcasts on the front page that haven't even released an episode yet. Oh. Like you can download sort of like the trailer episode that just talks about what it's going to be. So maybe we didn't do a trailer.
So it turns out that when you launch your podcast, this is when we learn much later. You have like, I think it's 8 weeks, 8 to 12 weeks or something where I think Apple in particular will consider featuring you based on your performance in that chunk of time. We didn't know this was happening. So by the time we found out this is a thing, we were
like 100 episodes.
We're like, oh, we should really tell someone about this.
We should get this thing featured.
And then they're like, there's no mechanism in place for us to even do this for
you. Because they do the same thing with games, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the launch. The moment it is launched, it doesn't actually matter.
They want new stuff.
Yeah, which is just because things are new if nobody knows
about
it.
But it's weird for a podcast because you do it all the time. Like there's a new episode coming out all the time. It's not like you launch it on the first week and it's like whatever it was then, that's just all that you get.
Yeah. Also, your first episode is always the worst one.
It is.
You know? Ours
definitely was.
Yeah. Because your audio
I feel like
shit.
We nailed that rule real, real good.
Yes. But yeah, so I just want to say thanks to everybody for, you know, listening and hanging out for the last 150 eps.
Here's to
150 more.
150 more. And then maybe three or four more after that.
God, it's going to be like, that's like three more years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think since it's 52 weeks in a year, we're still 6 episodes out from the three-year episode.
Whew. Although we did miss some.
We missed some in there, but we'll just pretend like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Also, fair. In the news, Crashlands comb over patch is out.
Mm-hmm. Go get it.
We intended to have it out on Thursday, but guess what? It's out now. So
no one's quite sure what happened. All we know is it's out.
That's
now.
What did happen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We have a whole bunch of new stuff. We'll have patch notes up on the website so you can kind of see all the stuff in there, but there's tons of new weapons. We have a new combat thing called combos where you can use your gadgets and devices that you build to trigger weird new effects depending on what is happening in combat.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hardcore mode where you have permadeath. So you only die once. Yodo, I believe is the term.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
And you can also do all the different difficulty levels on that where there's a whole new sort of like stat tracking mechanism on there. So we have a hardcore board so you can sort of like store your best scores and stuff. Tons and tons of stuff. All the patch notes will be there on the website at beastgush.net. So, you know,
check it out.
Keep an eye out for that. Also, was it last week we talked about the principles or was it like a year ago?
We have talked about it. We talked about it originally six, 100 episodes ago.
Decades.
It was long,
right.
Long ago. And then we brought it back up a few times.
Right.
So now we're going to bring it up and talk about it this time.
So this happened at GDC. We went to visit Blizzard, the Blizzard headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a big-ass orc statue in the middle of their campus that has the principles of the company emblazoned around the orcs. Well, I guess the orc is riding a wolf. So it's around the wolf's feet, not the orc's feet. You know.
And they're not emblazoned. They're not emblazoned with fire, though they ought to be.
They're emblazoned in bronze.
Yeah.
And bronzened. So they said, you know, these are just sort of the cornerstones of how we do things at our company. And we wanted to enshrine them around the feet of a bronze wolf.
They were
wolf.
More of tangent stones because they were on the edges of a circle.
They were tangential to the circle. Yeah. I don't know what the metaphor sort of means to like how that relates to an orc.
But I'm just saying they're not cornerstones is all I'm saying.
They were tangent stones.
So they're saying this orc is sort of the fundamental piece of the studio.
And these are all tangents.
These are all tangents. We don't really need
these. So we came away from that. We were like, we need our own tangent stones.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's this Avengers movie coming up soon. And there's Infinity Stones
in there.
And, you know, there's keystones. There's cornerstones.
People just fucking love stones.
They just love
stones
them.
Are just real heavy and solid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And no matter where they are, they seem important.
Yep. So we're like, we got to get us at least the same number of tangent stones as Blizzard has.
Yeah.
Which was like 6, I think.
So we just fucking doubled it.
We just doubled. We're like 12, I think.
So we have twice as many stones as Blizzard does, which I think means that we just now we get to have them.
I think stones is also a slang term for courage, isn't it? Like, you don't got the stones.
I think it's a slang term for balls.
Although I like that you thought it just meant courage.
You know, courage.
Oh, okay. Wow. There you go.
All right, let's talk about these stones.
This conversation's got a whole new meaning.
It did. Certainly. All right,
so we've been talking about these principles and sort of us trying to sort of figure out, like, okay, what, now that we've been making games for half a decade, what do we actually sort of stand for? How do we operate? How do we do things?
Well, going back to one of those earlier ideas, you know, you just got to get in there. Sometimes you don't know why you're in there.
Why are we in here?
Until later. So we realized we didn't quite know why we were.
Sometimes you wake up and you're already in there. Mm-hmm.
Or how we were in here, how we were being in here every day. So we wanted to kind of, I don't know, get them out. So I think Seth started and he just went on the whiteboard and just wrote some down.
Yes.
And then we started iterating.
We tweaked them.
And added more and then had, I think, 3 very large discussions about it post-GDC when everyone was kind of dead anyways. And we ended with these. So
yes.
Seth, if you want to.
So these can be found at bit.ly/BS_principles.
Mm-hmm. All lowercase.
That is all lowercase. Mm-hmm. And it's because these are the principles that underscore the stones of the company. Mm-hmm. Right.
These are our tangent stones.
All right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about these and what they mean. Here we go. Number one, mm-hmm. love the work. What
does that mean?
It means whatever it is that you're doing, you should be happy about it, basically. You should be pumped about it. And if you find, and more importantly, you should think about what this means in the inverse, which is if you find that you are regularly dreading doing the thing that you do on a day-to-day basis, then it's time to take a step back and really reevaluate what the fuck is happening and why.
Either yourself or what you're doing.
Yeah. Sometimes you got a bad frame. Sometimes you got a bad process. Or sometimes you're just doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Just not good.
But whatever it is, the most important thing is that you love what you do. So.
And that doesn't mean you love every moment of it. Sometimes you got to go through some slogs.
Yeah.
Well, it's fine. It's the global love for the work. Right?
It's like Michael Phelps talking about how he doesn't like staring at a black line on the bottom of a swimming pool for 6 hours a day, but he does love swimming.
Mm-hmm.
But those are both, you know, they're sort of the same thing, but it's all about your framing, right? All right, number 2, be humble.
What does that mean? Because we talk all the time.
Yeah.
You got to recognize you don't know shit. Yep. We don't know shit. Nobody knows shit.
Mm-hmm.
All we have is our own experiences, our own ideas of what we believe to be true, but we're wrong about everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's assume that you're wrong, assume that you know nothing.
Yeah. And so a big part of why we do the podcast is it's also an interesting sort of documentation of all the different ways we've been wrong over the years.
Yep.
Right.
Very few times we've been at least right enough is sort of the way I think about
it. As far as we know so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ways we haven't been wrong yet.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you'll find that as soon as somebody drops that humility and thinks like, I'm perfect, I'm fucking amazing.
I've got nothing left to learn.
Nothing I do has ever any flaws in it, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's when everything just goes to shit. Yeah. Right?
Well, I think it's also about listening to people and then finding those places where you might just not, basically being open to the fact that you might be doing something completely wrong, even if it's kind of working right now. So a good example. So I've been sketching, right? Been doing my art practice stuff. And I was thinking about it yesterday because I was like, I still don't like sketching in Inkscape. I don't just hop in there to try to like do some sort of creative expression. It's not a thing. And I realized that part of it, I think, is actually because I got my hotkeys wrong with regard to which ones control making squares and which ones control making circles. They're kind of hard to hit.
Classic.
And I think this has ended up making it just hard enough for me to do sketch work in there, or annoying enough that I just don't do it. And so it's one of those things where it's like, you got to be open to the fact that you might be wrong or fucking yourself over in a whole variety of contexts, and then be able to just listen to people and be interested in people in their approach and whatever else they've been doing. Because there's hints of truth just all over the place.
Yeah. Everybody has a completely incomplete picture of what is true, what's real, what's right. You know, you got to recognize you're probably wrong. Next one, be considerate.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
You bust. So this is just, you know, always think about the other people involved in whatever it is that you're doing. So whether that's, you know, if you're at work and how sort of how your role there fits in with what everybody else needs from you, and trying to make sure that you understand those needs and can deliver so that other people's lives are easier. Because, mm-hmm. of course, if everybody does this, then everybody's in a better spot, right? And that of course, applies to your life and relationships, whatever it is. Just be thinking about how what you do affects other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Maximize independence. This one is an interesting one.
It's a tricky one.
It's very tricky.
Because nobody is truly independent.
No.
Independent.
No. And you don't want to be truly independent.
That means you're too much alone and sad.
Yeah. And it's about creating the right kinds of dependencies. So for us, we always talk about it because we don't want to have a publisher, but we do need stores to sell our games, mm-hmm. because we don't have enough, you know, traction and fan base and so on to just to sell games directly to people. So we have to make that decision. Well, if we sell through a store, that's us giving up some independence. But on the other hand, that increases our independence because now we can make some money and then, mm-hmm. use that to do things that are, make us more, mm-hmm. independent. So yeah, it's not a cut and dried thing. It's just the general concept of wherever possible, hold on to your independence or only give it up in ways that actually in some other dimension or in the longer term, actually do create more independence.
Mm-hmm. And there's been instances where we've signed contracts in the past where we didn't think we could ask for stuff because we're like, we're a little potato.
We're just a little wee potato.
We don't have any power here. So we would just sort of be like, okay, I guess this is
just sign away how it ownership is. Of something.
And every time it's happened categorically, it's been bad in some way for us, whether it was sort of extra work or the deal just didn't pan out in the way that sort of would have actually been beneficial to us in the maximal sense. And so we've gotten a little bit more, I think, intelligent, I think, the last couple of years about when we get a contract from someone or we're working on a deal or something like that, just asserting what it is that we actually need for this to be a really good idea for us, instead of being like, well, it's kind of a good idea, you know, and, mm-hmm. we'll just take it as it is.
Well, yeah. And it's also recognizing that every new thing you do comes with some burden on your time.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are permanent or at least long-term.
Many of them you simply cannot escape. So whether that's, you know, getting a house or, mm-hmm. entering into a new business deal or whatever it is. And that's not to say that it's bad. You just have to understand what the demands on you will be and make sure that that's something you actually want sort of up front, mm-hmm. and that it's something that's going to be good for you actually.
Well, especially because they build up. So every time you take some opportunity, it also creates costs. And if all you're doing is looking at the opportunity side of things, just taking everything you can find, you know, putting your game on every platform you can imagine, without realizing that most of them won't make any money, but still require your time,
mm-hmm.
Then you can run into some real trouble.
Yep. That's true. So that's maximize independence.
Let's do one more, and then we'll hit the other half of the other.
Whenever we remember,
mm-hmm.
the next time.
All right. Next one is highest leverage first.
Yeah, I think this is a critical one.
Yeah.
We talked about the Crashlands problem. So when we launched Crashlands, we were like, this is good enough. But if you looked at our list of stuff to do, we had well over 200 things that were still in the list of undone, probably important things to do. So the question is why? Why were those not done when we launched? And why were we okay with them not even being in there? And some of them to this day are still on the list. It's been 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So what does that mean in the scope of making a game or in the scope of production? And I think for us, what it sort of meant is that you oftentimes find like you might set out and make a to-do list and you put a bunch of stuff in there, but then maybe something happens during the day that sort of upsets the balance of what your plan was. And those items on the to-do list kind of get pushed down a little bit. And what you'll see is that over time, oftentimes there's a category of things that would be kind of nice to have, but none of them are high leverage enough to actually make it to the top of the list.
And those items at the bottom, they just stay at the bottom.
They do.
There's always something better to be doing with, mm-hmm. your time than the bottom half of your to-do list, mm-hmm. basically.
Yep. And so, and depending on who you are and your skills that you bring to the table, different things have different leverage for you as a person or you as a studio. And so, for us, a lot of this learning has been around finding ways to offload the things that we do still think are important. Like all those things we wanted to get in, but we didn't have the capacity to do so. And so recently it's been about finding places where we can offload those onto other people so that they still get done, but not by us, which is sort of a new thing.
Yeah, but otherwise we did not do them. And I think a lot of people will balance things by doing just whatever is like easiest first or doing or even doing the largest thing first to try to get it out of the way. But the idea of leverage is not, it's not just about difficulty. It's also about how much time is going to go into it. It's actually most about how much time is going to go into it.
Well, it's about benefit over cost.
Exactly.
So cost is time. Look at both.
So just because something would only take you 20 minutes doesn't mean it's a good use of your time. Mm-hmm. And just because something is an enormous thing that has to be done doesn't mean that you should put it off and do other things first.
Right. I mean, I could just right now just leave this podcast room and just go make a stack of blueberry pancakes for the next 20 minutes, which would probably be a fucking awesome use of my time, actually, now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. So never mind. That's a terrible example.
Well, I think the point is that there's that old adage about the difference between being busy and being productive, right? Or being productive and being efficient. So you can be extremely efficient and just be doing the wrong thing.
I like the phrase, don't mistake activity for progress.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Just because you're doing stuff doesn't mean you're doing the right stuff.
And because most creative endeavors can never be completed, then you have to be able to just stop at some point. And yeah. The only way you can do that is by only doing the highest leverage things all the time. Because mm-hmm. at some point, you only have low leverage things left.
Yep.
And that's when you stop.
Now, in Crashlands, when we launched, we had over 300 things on our to-do list.
Three?
Of things that needed to go into the game. Mm-hmm. Quote, needed, mm-hmm. right? But at a certain point, every single one of them, like they were all those sort of things on the bottom of the to-do list that if we did them, it would be nice, but also pretty dang expensive for a questionable benefit, mm-hmm. right? So at a certain point, we look at the game, we're like, we got like 1,000 things in this game.
It's fine.
It's probably fine. It's probably good enough. We bug tested it. You know, mm-hmm. we beta tested it. It's ready to go. So we'll just get it out there and who cares?
Well, it's also, I mean, we've had the question before, but how do you know when a project's done? And it's probably when the things on your list all feel like low leverage things.
When you can't, yeah, when you're, or you have nothing left important to do.
Yeah, or when you just don't have any option left because you have to launch because you're out of money or because you're on a deadline or whatever.
Which is also part of that for Crashlands.
But because you have only done the highest leverage things the whole time, then you have done the best you could have possibly done in terms of making that product and getting it out when it had to be out.
That's right.
So yeah, those are the first couple.
Those are the first principles. Well, those are the first X. I don't count them, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. Next time, we'll come back and reveal the next Y principles, mm-hmm. possibly the next Z after that. We don't know. But yeah, those can be found over at bit.ly/BS_principles. Sam, I want to hear about flowers.
Okay.
I don't know what this means.
So this happened this past weekend on Saturday. I was in Crystal Bridges, the art museum area.
Sure, we all know.
Bentonville, Arkansas.
Yeah, okay. We all know about Crystal Bridges Art Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas. So
all those words, very familiar.
My wife and I went down there. It's this ridiculously gorgeous art museum they built just out in the woods in Arkansas. And it's incredible. But the little town we're in is called Bentonville. And there's this restaurant we went and ate at. And as we exited the restaurant, there was a ramp that you could take down as opposed to the stairs. For some reason, it was like, I'm just going to go walk down this ramp. So walking down this ramp. Diane and I are chatting, and then we get to a point where the sidewalk is sort of right next to the ramp at this point, and I could essentially swing through the rail of the ramp in order to get onto the sidewalk, right? And you know, sometimes in life, you're just feeling a little exuberant.
Mm-hmm. And you're just like, I'm going to flip. I'm going to flip and juke up this thing.
Just do the thing. So Diane and I are chatting, and I look at her, I'm like, I'm going to swing through this handrail. And she's like, all right, do it. So I swing through it, and I'm feeling awesome. Okay, so I come out the other side, no broken bones, nothing. Just standing there.
Perfect outcome.
Feeling very, so the exuberance is built more, mm-hmm. even at this point.
Oh, no.
But now Diana's on the other side of this rail, right? And I, in my mind, thought she was just going to swoop in behind me, you know? It's like a Batman-Robin sort of duo situation. Instead, she actually starts taking, just walking the rest of the ramp.
So now you're just standing there.
So now I'm standing there, but I'm looking the other direction, okay? And in this other direction is this flower bush. And again, feeling very exuberant, and I just walk over to it, like, very intensely. And then I do, like, a squat, and then I just, like, shove my arms out to sort of frame it. And then I whip my head, look back, and Diana's not there, but some other woman is there. And we just lock eyes just for a very long moment. And she's just walking toward me like a normal fucking person would.
Right.
And
What happened?
My arms were locked, you know, because I was very emphatically pointing at these flowers. And
as if to say, look at these fucking flowers.
They were amazing. So I'm just standing there to whip my head back, make eye contact. And there's just this moment. And then Diana is just So she had just turned the corner from the ramp. So she saw all this happen. So she's just dying of laughter behind the situation. I'm feeling betrayed at this point. And then, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to do. And the woman's just walking closer and she's kind of smiling a little bit. And then she just goes, "Your legs look really good in this pants."
Cause you're like squatting down.
I was like,
Thanks.
And then I just sort of trotted back to Diana and I was like, "You left me to die. You're supposed to be my
Honestly,
Robin."
Though, if she had been there, it wouldn't have changed anything.
That's true.
You would have just turned back and now Diana and this woman would have been there being like, I don't know what. I think you just made your bed and you just had to lie in it.
You know, sometimes you just got to be exuberant. You know, you're just feeling it. You got a good point at stuff really hard.
But then the world has to remind you. There's nothing to be exuberant about.
The world has to remind you, fuck you. It would have been awesome if that woman saw you, you locked eyes, and then she just goes, "Yes." And then she just started like dancing.
And yeah, wasn't that powerful. Someday I'll be able to transfer.
If she would have said, "That flower bush is awesome.
Oh my God."
Yeah, that's my story. We've all been there. I did this, yeah, in our old apartment that we, when we first moved to St. Louis, we had to take our laundry to the next building over down to their basement. And so, but it was, all of the units opened to the outdoors. And so there was kind of an outdoor stairwell area. So I had to go outside, down some stairs, over across the parking lot, and then down some other stairs into sort of like an outdoor subterranean alcove thing with railing around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the laundry in there and I came back out and I was like, "I'm just gonna,
yeah,
I'm not gonna take the stairs. I'm just gonna leap up and catch the railing and just hoist myself up and over." So I did that. And then same thing, when I emerged, there was somebody just standing there in the parking lot looking at me. And I was like, just wave, you know,
"Hello. Yes.
Hey." But, you know,
it's so weird though, because as a kid, if you're exuberant, people are like, "Yeah, kids, whatever." But as an adult, if you're exuberant, people are like, "Get back in line.
Go make some money. What the fuck are you doing?
Looking at flowers, flexing up a railing. Get out of here."
Although you could have
climbing
just,
things is fucking awesome.
It is.
You should have just yelled, "Parkour.
Parkour." And they'd be like, "Oh, he's one of those parkour fellas."
Yep. I think this also happens every so often, either when we leave the office or just kind of walking around. I think you guys do this too, where you just sprint.
Yeah, like, sometimes you got to sprint.
Sometimes you'll just sprint between two locations or leap over something.
I sometimes do that at the grocery store. I'll park far away and then I run in, but then I just grab a cart and walk casually.
Yeah, now there are other people there.
Yeah, people see me and they're just like, "What is it?"
Because you're just going.
And then you just really needed to get that cart.
It would be nice if there was more diversity in how people just moved around in the world. People are just fucking, they're just ambling.
But think about how interesting it is.
Sprinting, dancing through places. It'd be spectacular.
Yeah. Kids, they skip. Kids skip around. Mm-hmm. They do cartwheels and shit. When you become an adult, you're walking. That's it.
How long has it been since you guys skipped?
Oh, I private skipped in 20, 30 years.
I kind of feel like I have recently for some reason.
I'm gonna do it
today. But I don't. I can't think of it.
It's hard.
If you
haven't done it in a long time.
Yeah, it took me a second to do it.
You forget how the legs do.
It's like
and
a
then
weird cadence.
It just hurts because.
Yeah, I still have that like traumatic memory of gym class because I couldn't learn to skip. I just like, it wasn't working for me. And Mrs. Phelps, our gym teacher, who's kind of mean, she had it out. Everybody was in a line and then she held my hand. And then made me skip in front of everybody. But I couldn't.
That's probably not the best way to address that sort of personal failing.
God, I hate it. But I'm going to go skip in a parking lot today. And I'm not going to give a shit because I'm an adult and I'll do what I want.
You should just skip over to some flowers and just do the same thing.
But you should
look at these.
Yeah.
And then just make eye contact.
Go, look at these. If there's somebody there, just go,
exuberance.
See what happens.
What is he on?
You got to do this experiment. You got to do this just everywhere until you catch a good response.
Yeah.
It will happen. This is just like those scenes where you'll see people be outdoors at a festival or something.
Like the one guy dancing.
There'll be one person dancing, just super exuberant, not giving a fuck, you know, probably not even to the beat of the music at all. And they'll just be gone. And everybody will be around them just like, "What?
Look at that weirdo.
Look at that weirdo." And then pretty soon, one person joins in, and then within seconds, it's a crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, you just gotta get in there.
You just gotta get in there.
All right. Well, this reminds me as well. Mm. So I was listening to Freakonomics Radio this weekend. They were talking about big myths in psychology, and they were specifically talking about the bystander apathy concept. And they were like, the concept of bystander apathy is like when something bad happens and there's a group of people and people just don't help. Mm-hmm. Like the more of them there are, the less likely there is that the problem will get resolved. And so, but really it has nothing to do with being a bystander. Just has to do with people reading social cues and like as to what is an acceptable behavior. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they did an experiment, which is this smoke experiment where they would take a student, put them in a room and have them take a math test. And then they would start pouring smoke in through the vents. And if it was just one student by themselves, they would see the smoke and they'd be like, oh, fuck, the building's on fire.
Get out of here.
And then they would leave and then tell somebody, right? As soon as there was one additional person, then the smoke would start coming in and each person would look, instead of just reacting to the smoke, they would just react to the other person. So they would just look at that person and be like, well, they're still taking their test. Mm-hmm. I assume they see the smoke, but they don't seem alarmed. So, and then they would look down and then the other person would look. So they just kept looking at each other, trying to see who would react. And if nobody reacted, then they both assumed that each knew something the other didn't. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like the line test where if you get three people to evaluate the length of a line and then lie about it, then the fourth person, even though the line is obviously different, the fourth person will just agree with what everybody mm-hmm. else said. Right. So all this comes down to say is people's behavior is almost completely dictated by the behavior of the people around them, right? So if you just start violating that real hard mm-hmm. by every time you see a flower bush,
just
getting in there, like squat down in front of it and yell.
Well, it's also one thing, like the power of a group of people. Because if you've ever gone out to a bar, or even just gone out to like a picnic or anything. Depending on the group of people you're with, you'll have a very different time because of whatever the sort of general default behaviors are of all those people.
Yes.
Because some people will be very serious the whole time. Maybe like you've been to a professional, I think the difference between a professional event and going and hanging out with your buddies, like they're all people. But
yeah, and weirdly, those buddies and friends also go to professional events mm-hmm,
where they're all locked
where they
up,
all have to pretend like they aren't who they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's always interesting to see how people morph around, but I think it's generally people don't skip enough. That's just what I'll say. People don't skip enough. Maybe take some
Nailed
time
it.
To take a skip this week.
Don't take a walk.
Take a skip.
Take a skip.
Just flail your arms all over the place like a windmill.
While skipping.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's part of skipping, right?
That's how I did it.
You ever see that video?
That's why I was wrong.
You ever see that video of the guy doing the really weird walk to the Aha Take On Me thing where he's, and he accumulates followers mm-hmm. as he traverses mm-hmm. the land? Mm-hmm. That's what you got to do.
Yep.
All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. That's still true, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Cool. So if you want to get your question in there, just go over there and just do that thing.
It's still true, right?
We've got a lot of web
things have changed.
Mm-hmm. I assume that will always be true. It'll just look different at some point.
That is correct.
All right, first question comes from Anonymous. Time to get serious. Do you guys think you'd be making games today if Sam didn't have to face cancer and crash the lands right into cancer's face? I think it's amazing that something like that brought you guys together to win together, have other hard times such as staffing changes at the studio, April snow, and the classic stomach tied around the throat routine have been good for winning together in the same way. I'm interested in what makes a team stronger and what just depletes morale.
It's interesting.
Yeah, a lot of depth.
Well, so I think since we were making games before I tried to die, I think we would probably have still been making them.
I might not have been.
I don't think Adam would have been.
No, probably not.
I would wager. Because I know a big part of your wanting to hop on over was because...
That was a major impetus. I was like, I should probably go hang out with people, you know?
Before they flee the mortal coil.
Yeah, because they're trying real hard to do it.
Like snake people trying to shed their skins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I try to do everything really hard.
Yeah, so. I mean, my original plan was actually, I was just like, I'll just do this for a year or two, just to like spend some good quality time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it turned out it was way more awesome than doing science. Mm-hmm. So now here we are.
Mm-hmm. We did it.
Yeah, as far as like those team building things, I think anytime where you have opportunity for people to show sort of like the depth of how much they give a fuck, if as long as they show up, then you have a team building situation. If they fail to show up, then you have a team depletion.
You have the opposite.
Yep. And it's one of those tricky things where like, and especially everybody just sort of needs to know. It's very obvious with something like cancer. And I think it's actually why it tends to be a good rallying point for people is because it's not like, oh, is that is this bad? Like, should I step in? You know,
should I say
out?
Something?
It's pretty clear that it'd be nice if you did something, right? or made a gesture.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are a lot of things in life that it's not quite clear what that means. So, you know, Adam got his laser eye surgery last week. Mm-hmm. Seems like he's been doing fine. So I haven't brought him any cookies or anything. I certainly didn't send him a get well soon card.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know?
Or like an eye drop basket.
Right. But maybe that'd be a nice thing to do. You know, that was an opportunity that I could have taken to be like, hey man, I got your back.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, he knows. And he seems like he's doing fine.
And really all I needed was to have somebody to have my eyes, which is what the lasers did.
So right. His back was fine.
Yeah.
I don't know why you always got to be talking about his back.
It's just a nice, get off nice back. But yeah. So I think it's one of the things you get to recognize where those, especially in your friend groups or your work groups, where there's an opportunity that suddenly opens up for you to really show that you care. And we had another person in our community in St. Louis who, I think it was after after CrashLands launched, who got diagnosed with cancer. And so I immediately just made some calls, and then we had a little sort of live event thing to raise some money for her at the bar where we do the game dev drink up here in St. Louis. And she was like, I think she'd been in the community for like a month or two at that point. She's a streamer. And it was an awesome thing. And her family came out and it was just like a really nice moment, you know? And so I think you just got to keep your ears up for times where even with things that aren't so, you know, horrifying or urgent as something like cancer, where there might be an opportunity for you to, you know, just do a little bit for a person.
Mm-hmm. But it also reveals for the person who's dealing with something, mm-hmm. It also reveals that first part of our principles, which is the love of the work. Because for some people, no matter how bad things are getting, they're going to do fucking everything to try to contribute and be a core part of the team still and actually like do the thing that they enjoy. Mm-hmm. Where people who don't love the work will be finding even the smallest excuse, you know, to mm-hmm. not. And certainly if there's a major reason, then they'll basically go flee it. So
yeah, you'll know if there are people who nothing will stop them from getting their shit done. And there's people who anything will stop them.
Right. So I think it really does
come down to love of the work.
It really does. Yeah. I think for us, you know, we've seen all three of us go through stuff. Sam had the worst stuff to go through mm-hmm. where it demonstrated the love of the work to the point where that was basically an opportunity for us to have proven to each other that like we're in this, we give a shit and we're going to make this work. And so any kind of a crisis of any sort is basically an opportunity both for you to show compassion to somebody, but also for the person undergoing a crisis to demonstrate
what they value.
Yeah. Right. And so really all of these, anything that happens, you know, to you or to your studio, to whatever, is simultaneously something that you got to deal with, but it's also an opportunity to get a deeper understanding of where everybody stands. Mm-hmm. So for us, like every time we've, you know, nobody, like everybody just told me when I got my GERD surgery, they were just like, yeah, just go do it. Cause presumably if it's bad enough that you feel like you need to, then it must be bad. Cause we know you want to be here. Right.
Right.
You're not just getting your stomach tied around your throat just
for fun.
Just to get out of school.
Just to escape. Right. Right. And it's exactly that sort of thing, which is once you know that you can trust people, then all of a sudden just everything gets a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I would say that all these things have actually helped us as a team.
I think the team depletion stuff usually just comes from, actually, again, the kind of the love of the work thing. Mm-hmm. If you're stuck in a place where you feel like you're not doing the right stuff or you're not on the right project, or whatever else, I think that can just erode sort of general team quality a ton. Like really feeling like you can contribute to a project and feeling like you're in the right spot is a huge thing. So that's not even an event driven thing. That's sort of just like a general project driven thing.
Yeah, but also if your teammates don't love the work, then it's really hard for you.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer.
It's hard to come into work and be like, I'm excited. It's being exuberant about flowers.
Exactly.
You look back at someone's just looking at you.
You come into work and you're pumped and everybody else is just shaking their head. They're like, don't. Mm-hmm.
They're like, because it's a challenge, actually. And I think this is one of those interesting things where for any of our listeners who have done, I know some people have implemented big changes in their lives over the course of sometimes listening to the podcast or whatever else. And you'll find people sometimes who get upset at you.
Yeah, they get in your way.
They get in your way. And I think Seth had a tool tip that he wrote the other day, which has become a little mini catchphrase in the studio for one of the power-ups in Levelhead, which is, get out of my way. I got things to be.
That's right.
And that's sort of, it sort of encapsulates nicely, I think, a good response to some of those people and some of those times, which is, you know, it's really upsetting when you get really into a thing and then you want to go back, say, to the same group of friends or whatever else, and they kind of get it mean to you about it, or they're just not interested in supporting you in any way. So those are the worst. I like, cause especially as a person who, for me, like building off of other people's ideas of what I'm doing is kind of an important thing for me. Get, like happily moving into a new project or whatever else, like thinking that other people are going to be like, oh, this is cool. It's kind of a nice boost for me. And so if people start undercutting it, then I have a harder time. I have a much harder time doing
that. Yeah. Thing. And that does kind of depend on your, if your friend group is a group of people who you tend to commiserate with, meaning share your misery.
Yeah, you should get out of that.
Commiserate, right? But as soon as you start doing stuff to sort of stop being so fucking miserable.
They'll bring it down.
Then they're not going to be pumped about it because, you know, it's like being the one person at the party who's not drinking. You know, you're sort of violating the custom, right? So you just got to make sure that you're around the right people.
Yeah. But I think there's a lot of things there, and it's just about seeing those opportunities or seeing problems as opportunities for this sort of thing. So, you know, whenever we've had a big crisis internally in the studio, usually once it's resolved, then we'll take the crew out to be like, let's just go eat food somewhere together and stare off into space. It's like the Avengers situation.
Yeah, you gotta have a shawarma scene.
Do a shawarma scene. Get everybody back together after things pass and just sit there.
You don't even need to say anything. Just
eat a sandwich.
You've been through it all. You just yeah, that scene resonated so hard with me more than anything else in the fucking movie, because there've been so many of these times in life where just after going through something just incredibly grueling, and you get together with the folks who you sort of shared that experience with, and you sit down and like, nobody has to say a fucking thing. you're just eating and you're just like all.
And every so often someone's like, man. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a lot of aliens.
That was a shitload of aliens. But everybody knows that, so it doesn't even need to be said, you know? It's just an occasional grunt. All right, next question comes from Woland77. What would you do? I'm reading this sort of using the inflection of the question. What would you do for a chocolate-coated brick of vanilla ice cream?
Can we say Klondike bar in here?
There might be a trademark problem. I don't know. It's like the big game situation.
Can't talk about it.
Can't talk about it.
What would you do for an ice cream bar?
I wouldn't do. I'd trade it for maybe a lactaid bottle.
Wait, trade for it? But then you don't even need the lactaid anymore.
That's good. I don't like ice cream. Then I can use the lactaid to eat something I do want.
Makes sense. I think.
Yeah, I said it. I'm not into ice cream. What are you going to do about it?
That's fine. Everybody can be whatever they're into. It's fine.
That's right.
Just don't hate on me for liking ice cream.
Yeah, man.
I don't. Good.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, I love ice cream, but I always feel like shit after I eat it. So so it kind of depends on what.
It's probably pretty common.
Yeah. I think it depends on what my situation is when you come to me with this brick of ice cream. Because if I'm in a mood where just ice cream sounds really good right now, I will sacrifice every bodily system I have.
If you're in the desert.
Yeah.
And you come across a mini fridge with a solar panel on top of it.
We don't need to go that far.
And there is one thing in it, which is a Klondike bar.
Sure, yeah.
What would you do to get it?
Well, I would be in physical pain, because that's what would happen after I ate it.
Yeah.
But that would be like, it doesn't even require that much.
But also beforehand, too.
Also beforehand. But it doesn't require that much setup, because if I just hadn't had anything sweet for a few hours,
that would also be sufficient. That's basically the same as being stuck in the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, so what I will do for ice cream is be in physical pain after
straight up murder.
What I have done, yeah, I killed a man. No, I mean if you stand in line for like 10 or 15 minutes to get an ice cream bar, I mean think about it, because like you're swapping like 20 minutes of your literal existence.
You're dying.
You're literally dying for that piece of that ice cream.
You're dying 15 minutes at a time.
See, that's what you're trading every time. So if I can get them shipped to my house.
And then you're going to die faster because you ate some ice cream.
That's also true.
And also, I think
generally dying.
You have to recognize that the opportunity cost of consuming a chocolate bar is infinite. Because
you could have done
anything else with that time, and you could have eaten anything else specifically, you know? And so the possible things that you had to give up to eat that, it's just astronomical. It's incomprehensible.
I think that's true for then opportunity cost for anything, right?
Yeah.
Opportunity cost is always infinite.
Now, technically, I'm pretty sure the opportunity cost is generally measured by the next best thing, but not in this case. Just for the sake of the question.
This is where the benefit of living more in the present moment comes from, right? because, you know, if you eat your ice cream, you don't have to worry about the fact that you could have eaten literally everything.
You've
else.
Got it now. Time to you move on with
just
your life.
Enjoy that ice cream. Mm-hmm. Have a good time.
Just own it.
Watch those minutes of your life drift by. You know,
maybe do some squats and some windmill arms.
Consider death. You know,
yeah. Just chew your ice cream. Gaze out. Gaze out upon the desert and just think, mm-hmm. I'm so fucked.
And then the people around you.
I'm
going to
die one day. Mm-hmm.
The people around you also eating ice cream, your friends.
You can weep and you can use the chocolatey vanilla mm-hmm. Covered wrapper to wipe your tears. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how I eat my ice cream.
Everybody around you who's in the same boat, they won't even say anything. They'll just go, mm-hmm. Man, yeah. That's crazy.
Everybody who's in the same boat, because you're in a boat in the desert, which this is a terrible situation for mm-hmm. everybody.
Yeah. There's just one Klondike bar.
There's
left.
One Klondike bar. You're in a boat in the desert.
And you've committed all of your friends to death because you just got all that calorie dense food just in you now.
Because you somehow detoured your boat into the desert mm-hmm. yeah. to get
it's
that
one
Klondike
of those sand boats.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from I am Cade. Hello, everyone. First off, I love you.
Mm. Wow. Well, thanks. Right. That's nice.
Do any of you feel debilitated when there's too much choices in games? Sometimes I start the game over like 3 times because I want to try different classes and different choices to get the best reward. Loot, bonus, XP, etc. I think I have this from Final Fantasy games and missing amazing items early in the game and not being able to get them later and being so mad I didn't get the best thing. Best regards, I am Cade.
I definitely have had this problem. We've talked about my alt fever.
Alt fever.
Alt fever issues called. Before.
Mm-hmm. Alt is short for alternate character.
Yep.
Classic used term in MMOs mm-hmm. where you typically choose a something, main. You choose something to be, mm-hmm. and that's who you are now.
Yep,
and there are things that you can do, but there's also things
there's
you
more
can't
things
do.
That you can't do.
There's always more things that you can't do.
So, yes,
just like real life,
as far as this whole just so this is an interesting question because most of the questions nowadays are about like there's a billion games, how do I pick which one? How do I not get overwhelmed?
What if you do pick one, but now you're still overwhelmed?
Now you're still overwhelmed because you're a fucking person, and this is the problem. So,
just get regular whelmed?
Yeah, how do you just go have a good time, yeah. actually? Because I used to do this a lot, too, where I would worry about optimizing. Essentially, like, at any point, I would do the same thing where you save and then be like, well, actually, let me back this up. I spent 4 hours in here, but I'm going to go undo this real quick because I just saw this new class that does this other thing, and maybe it'll be better if I go in that tree whenever else.
Right.
I think it's a tricky thing. I don't know if it's as I've gotten older and sort of my time has become more and more scarce where I've been like, I guess this is just my path now, or if I've actually gotten more content with my sort of moment to moment gameplay, mm-hmm. generally speaking. I like to think it's the latter, but it might.
Yeah. I mean, cause we talked about this in the past because I don't look for the best time or the best thing. Mm-hmm. I just look for a good time, mm-hmm. you know? So I just choose whatever.
Satisficing versus maximizing.
So I just choose whatever seems to be fun, given my limited knowledge because I haven't played the game yet. And I also know that I'm almost guaranteed to play any game one time in terms of like through the game, right? Mm-hmm. And most games, I'm not going to play all the way through. I'm going to play some hours of, like up to maybe a dozen, but usually not even that many. So the cost for me to spend all my time making decisions, trying to figure out what the maximum
too high.
A maximum efficiency or the mm-hmm. coolest things or whatever is just really, really high. And so I just don't. I just hop in, start playing, and then just have a good time. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah.
It's just a question
like life.
Why are you even playing the game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you there to just like,
are you
to
playing
maximize
it to get the coolest stuff or just to have a good time?
Mm-hmm. It's maybe just relax.
Because if you always want to get the coolest stuff, you can never have a mm-hmm. good time.
You can't. It's true.
Whoa.
That's like, yeah.
It's like a dark metaphor for just capitalism, man.
Yeah, it's a social commentary,
man.
No, I mean this is the same kind of thing when okay. First, all right. This is I'm like 1/8 formed on this idea,
go.
So I'm gonna need you guys to just carry me through it.
Got
all
it.
Right? So
I'm ready.
So at a company, when the boss says like, "All right, everybody, here's the deal. I need everybody to be real excited because we have a new revenue target. Mm-hmm. We're gonna make $60 million as a company, mm-hmm. right?" And nobody's really excited about that.
Right.
Because who gives a shit, right? And the boss is fixated on this because that's what they want. But everybody else needs like a reason to be there.
Because mm-hmm. They're not getting the $60 million.
They're not getting the $60 million.
Neither is the boss.
They're just getting their salary. But most importantly, the revenue is a side effect. Mm-hmm. It's a side effect of what the business does. It's not the thing that the business doesn't just go then just have revenue. Like mm-hmm. there's an intermediate step, which is the whole reason that the business exists, mm-hmm. right? So it's the idea of getting fixated on this weird end goal that even having it isn't satisfying because the acquisition of it is also like part of the fun. Mm-hmm. So if your goal is to have the best things, like to have the best items in the game or whatever, that's not the point, right?
It should be the getting of the thing.
Right. It's just playing the game and having something cool to work toward, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're always perpetually dissatisfied because you haven't gotten the best things or because you've excluded yourself from getting the best things, then you will just be kind of perpetually bummed out about what you don't have because you can't have everything. And that's not really the point at the end. Yeah,
there's also nothing more disappointing than actually getting the best thing.
It usually is not good. It's fun for a very short period of time.
We've talked about in the past, the Terraria UFO with super the infinite mining lasers. Fucking spectacular. It is a great 15 minutes of experience. And after that, you're just like, I've removed all of the gameplay.
Now the game is not a game.
Well, this is a problem I have because when I play Terraria, I usually play with you guys, but then I jump in and then one of you guys is like, here. And then you just like hand me some kind of take this mega drill that just insta blasts 400 blocks at once. And then I just am like mowing down entire ecosystems without breaking a sweat.
Which would have been fun if you had to work for it.
Yeah. Well, no, it wouldn't have been fun. It wouldn't have been. The working for it would have been the fun part, right?
Yeah. And then the next goal, but now you don't have the context to form a nice future goal, you know? So
yeah. So actually it's having things is no fun at all. Getting things is fun.
Super fun. Right? Yeah,
the trick is to never actually get the thing. Like, this is also great for life, right?
Or if you get something, make sure that the thing that you get is not the final thing. It's just an intermediate thing on the way to the next thing. Yep. You know, because humans, we need progression. We need things to keep moving.
But this also helps you not buy as many things just in normal life too, you know, because if you just realize that you're just not going to be very pumped.
Those things
don't
matter.
So what is the word that means the horror of finally acquiring the thing that you've always wanted?
Yeah, I don't know what the actual, some German word some guy made up, which is hilarious. It's the dictionary of, I can't remember what it is. Dictionary of like obtuse words or some weird thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Something.
The guy made a word for the emotion of the horror of finally getting what you wanted, which I feel like is perfect for video games. Right. Like, you work really hard to get this UFO that shoots lasers, and then within 15 minutes, you realize that now the game
sucks now.
Destroyed. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I did this.
But because of your own innate human psychology, you can't just get rid of that UFO.
I mean, no, you gotta keep it in case you want it.
It's so useful. Yeah. You know, in case you want to mow down an entire mountain in seconds, you got to keep it. But you don't want it because it makes everything shit.
Well, I think an interesting thing here is like if what you like about games is sort of doing the maximizing thing, then it probably suggests a better route to playing them, which is instead of just playing it and then realizing halfway through that you made all the wrong decisions, enter a research phase before you play it.
But then here's the thing. Now all of a sudden you don't have free will anymore.
No, you don't.
Because now you're just playing out a script that you just researched.
But who cares? That wasn't your point anyway.
But nobody has free will, so...
That's a fair point. But we get to pretend, though, you know? Because if you just go play a game, you don't know what's going to happen, you're making decisions on the fly. Because free will is all about...
Here's what I'm saying.
Believing you're making decisions on the fly. As soon as you just lay out a script for yourself, and then you go play through the script, you know?
I think it's super fun, because that's like people saying, you know, oh, you need to go beat these 12 different levels to kill Bowser at the end of this whole thing. I mean, you got no free will. You're running right for this whole video game.
You could go left.
But I'm like, sometimes I'm not going to watch.
Just die, though, every time.
But that's different than going and watching a YouTube video of the fastest way to beat each level and then watching each one 100 times so that you memorize exactly what's going to happen.
Unless it's what you're into.
And then finally playing it.
This is what I'm saying. Because if the value you're trying to derive from playing the game is just like the conquering of the game, 100%, then don't just play it. Don't play it. Go research it first, take notes and shit, and then go do it. Because that's where you're getting into your hang up, right?
That's fair. Then you always have the best thing, and then you just one-shot everything, and you're like, well, that was boring.
Yeah, and then when you realize that it's super boring, then just, you know, go back.
That's when you just go reevaluate your sort of whole
life. How you're, your core participating, and then you just say, okay, I'm just going to go play this and not worry
about it. No, I mean, it's always a huge challenge, though, as a designer, which, I mean, here's the thing. I would never tell somebody, hey, you're playing games wrong.
No. No.
But one thing I do know as a game designer is that it's just universally less satisfying to always win with no challenge.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this before,
I mean, but that's just true.
One of the things we have to watch out for is when you put something in a game that's supposed to be a fun tool, and then people end up only using that thing because of some weird benefit it has. And a good example of this was there's a game called Dead Cells, which is like a really, really tough as nails, I guess it's side-scrolling, technically, platformer thing. And it's got combat in it.
Like a pile of nails or a bed of nails?
Bed of nails for a situation.
But that's,
linear. So, so you have a lot of, there's a lot of fighting in the game, and you can pick up, you get random drops of weapons, and you can pick up shields and swords and stuff. But one of the weapons is a bow. And now we got a problem, because range is always better. It's just always better in video games. Because
you're over here.
Because you're over here.
They're over there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which
means
better.
For most enemies are only going to have one attack mode, which is either they're melee or they're ranged. And either if they're ranged or melee, it's just going to be easier to hit them if you're also ranged. And so the designer put this in, and then apparently was very aggravated. The game did very well, but was very aggravated because he watched these YouTube videos. And as soon as people got the bow, what they did with it was they would just sort of stand back and just lob shots.
And just slowly kill everything.
And that is not how he was trying to get it to go.
We have ramen crash lines with pets.
Yeah.
Yeah. People do it.
People get a pet and they're like, oh, I'm just going to take 3 hours to kill everything, but as long as I'm guaranteed to never get damaged.
Yes. Or in Quadrupus Rampage with us too, because you could dodge.
Yeah.
So people sometimes with their pets, leave their pets there and then just swim around the boss fight for like 15 minutes.
Because even though that's way less fun, it's also how you guarantee
it's
a
maximizer.
Win, right? And so it's just like your UFO where you could choose not to do it, but that also means you expose yourself to the risk of failure. Mm-hmm. Which people generally try to avoid.
So sometimes as a designer, you can make a thing and then realize you set up this kind of perverse incentive structure where the maximizing behavior for the player is also the one that is the least fun. And then you have to answer the question, how?
I think importantly, a maximizing behavior is almost always the least fun.
It usually is.
If there's such a clear, obvious way to play that's so much better than the others, then it's generally sort of a, not necessarily game breaking, but it just skews the table so heavily in your favor. And it sends you to be crazy not to do it.
Exactly.
You know, then it's just kind of boring. Mm-hmm. So, that's a problem. Hopefully we don't fuck that up with Levelhead, but we will.
Probably.
All right. one final question comes from Retro Banana Man NL. How did you get in contact with Fat Bard for your music? Just a lucky shot or a thoughtful decision?
Lucky shot, probably.
No.
We're not a lot of early thoughtful decisions, though. You know what I mean?
What was it?
At the beginning, we were just kind of doing everything by the seat of our pants.
This is the flip side of you just got to get in there, which is you just got to get out there.
Mm.
Okay. So, you got to get out.
The one place you shouldn't be is where you are is what.
You got to, definitely
just
don't
get
be there.
Get somewhere else.
Right. So, you got to get in there, but also out there, depending on the sort of time of day.
Sometimes out there is in there.
Yeah,
so it's some sort of it's a Klein bottle sort of situation.
It's a Klein bottle.
Yeah, what's a Klein bottle?
It's a 3D Mobius strip, basically.
Yeah. It's a real thing. Yeah, it's a real shape where the outside and the inside are the same. It's
how do you both know what a Klein bottle is?
How do you not know what a Klein bottle is?
Oh, now I'm wondering that too.
Just Google it. But it's kind of like a person.
How do you even spell that? Like Calvin Klein?
K-L-E-I-N.
Calvin Klein's bottle?
It's some scientist or mathematician or something.
The weird thing about a Klein bottle is it's a bottle. But it has no inside.
Is it a bottle then?
Yes.
Does it seem?
It's kind of like
its outside.
Yeah, it's like how a person's insides are also your outsides topologically. You know,
kind of.
That's real gross.
It's true. Yeah,
but I mean, from a functional standpoint, they're not. Your insides are definitely your insides. I understand that they're also your outsides.
Yeah, they're both. That's the whole thing.
In a sort of inverted tube context.
Humans are just tubes just with legs.
Well, but anyway, the question I didn't remember.
It's about how we met Fat Bard. Right?
Oh,
so it comes down to this.
Yeah.
Once you start getting in there,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be doing things. You're going to be doing all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You're going to be doing things that if other people saw them, they might be like, hey, I'd like to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But other people will never see those things unless sometimes you get out there,
mm-hmm.
right? Where those people are.
Mm-hmm.
Where is there? I have no fucking
idea. Depends where you're at right now.
Yeah, depends where you're at. Depends where you're literally physically at,
mm-hmm.
sort of, you know, geographically.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it was, we were heavily involved in the St. Louis game dev community. So we'd go to all kinds of events. We would give talks. We went to these things called drink ups, mm-hmm. where you just go and drink up with other other folks, other game developers. And we also did a lot of game jams. And so so Fat Bard decided, hey, we're going to make music for video games. So he just got in there, started making music for video games. But then he was like, I can't make music for video games unless I also get out there where the game developers are to make those connections, right? So he got out there. We got out there. We were both out there. And then we saw each other and we kind of made eye contact. And then that was it.
We linked souls.
We merged souls. And now I'm not sure what the repercussions of that are, but
we'll find out.
That's just where we landed.
Yeah.
But so really sort of in short, it's about networking.
Yes.
It's the business term for it.
For getting out there.
Networking is making friends.
Yes.
But then put into a business slant because we got to make sure we keep things formal, you know. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this, our 150th episode.
What is that in like the fancy words? I know bicentennial is two. I'm trying to remember what
word. Or is it half?
I believe it's a sesquicentennial.
Hold on,
let me look it up.
Also,
that's why I couldn't remember it. Because
I'm outraged because at some point I wanted to
sesquicentennial.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Recently, I wanted to write a thing, right? Like a thing that's going to happen every other week, right? And so I wanted the word for that. I wanted to say bi-weekly, right? But I was thinking about that and I was like, wait, is that twice weekly or every 2 weeks?
It means both.
Yeah, I fucking Googled it and I looked at the definition. So bi, either bi-monthly, bi-weekly, bi-yearly, whatever. All of them simultaneously mean half, twice during that period or once every two of them.
So it means half or two.
Why is that how we do things?
So here's my proposal. Because fortnightly is already a thing. Fortnight's also a game. It's pretty good.
What does fortnightly mean?
Every 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. It's one of the meanings of bi-weekly.
A fortnight is 2 weeks?
Yes. Like a fourscore is 2 decades.
Yes.
Right?
The score is 20.
Four score. That's right. It's not a fourscore.
Correct.
Four scores. Yep.
Four score is 80.
That's right.
It's not a fortnight situation. It's Fortnite. So
Fortnite.
What I'm suggesting is we just put fort in front of everything else.
Fort monthly.
To get described once every two.
Fort yearly.
Fort yearly would do this thing.
Although that would be
fort quarterly.
But a fortnight is actually 14 nights.
Okay.
So now we're gonna have 14 years if we use fort year.
No. But you just it's just like bye. You just make it up.
Like fort quarterly.
Fort quarterly sounds great. Twice a quarter.
That's every 14 quarters or 14 times a quarter.
And you're getting hung up on this 14
because fortnightly is 14 nights. So fort bleh is 14 of that thing. So fort monthly is every 14 months. Yeah,
but a month
fort
is quarterly even...
is every 3.5 years.
But if it's 14 times a year, then that's like a little over once every month, which is kind of like every 3 weeks. Now we got a word for every 3 weeks.
Fort
monthly.
No, because that's every 14 months.
Oh, so that would be 14 times.
Fort. I don't know. I like the original approach, which is just call it two. Quit using 14.
So you mean saying every 2 months or?
Fort monthly is every 2 months. I know it's 14, but we don't have to give a shit. Because clearly whoever made up this
because apparently words just don't fucking mean anything.
You just agree on what it means and then you don't worry about it.
Or you agree that it means two completely different, incompatible
and
things.
And then everyone's like, I don't know. No one has control over this. It's language.
This is just like the steep learning curve versus shallow learning curve problem. A steep learning curve technically is something that's very easy to learn because a learning curve is an actual sort of like graph that shows how much you can learn on the horizontal and how long it takes.
Unless you just decide to use how little you could learn over how long it takes.
Right.
Still a learning curve. It's a little.
But now it's going to go the other direction. So maybe the people who.
How little you can learn.
I'm just taking the inverse of it, I assume.
But you're keeping the time axis. So now it's a descending curve.
Yeah. I guess I don't know how
because
shallow
you can
it.
How much is left.
It gets shallower.
How much is left to learn
because
over time.
You can wait. How little there is that you can learn, which in other words
is this a tangent stone situation?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right, wrap us up.
All right, let's wrap it up, folks. We'd like to thank our producer Fat Bard for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. I'm pretty sure we have forums still.
I've heard of them.
I don't go in there. Go to the Discord.
Stuff. Just go to the Discord.
Scratch that from the record.
All right. We can go ahead and edit that out. Mm-hmm. So that's gone now. Mm-hmm. Also, if you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can come into the Discord server, which is at discord.gg/bscotch. Come say hello. Definitely don't go to the forums because they don't exist. If you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, check out our shop, which is over at shop.bscotch.net. Do we have a promo?
We do.
Or will.
And we will. It's if you enter comb over at your checkout, you'll probably get a 20% discount, I think.
You'll probably get it. You know what? Here's the thing.
It's just coming out in an email later this week.
Here's the thing. Wait. Just put everything in the cart. Just get ready. When you go to put the promo code in, put comb over in. It may work. It may not.
Did we agree on
20%? Go ahead and buy it in. Anyway.
It's fine. I just couldn't remember the exact
thing. Yeah, it may or may not be 20%. May or may not be comb over as the.
It's going to be anywhere from a negative 20 to 20% discount.
Just do your best. Yeah. We'll do our best.
We'll be fine.
Everybody's just doing their best.
Just leave us alone. You know?
Also, if you'd like to send us whatever, we have a mailbox, which you can find the address for over at mailbox.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.